pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now with the 2 minute drill. It's brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and those Corona hard seltzers. Hey, listen, before long, it'll be swimsuit season. 0 grams of carbs, 0 grams of sugar. That is the Corona hard seltzer. Get it today. 4 great flavors. Wherever you buy your Corona, you can stock up on it right now. Let's get the drill started in Boston, Massachusetts. Butch Stearns, Fox 25, is there. Butch, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, except we're Loserville now instead of Wintersville.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, welcome to a reality check, man. The Red Sox have gone down. Celtics are still at least a contender, right? But it ain't the same way it was with the Red Sox and the Patriots. How did the season go? What was the reaction in Boston when watching Brady win for somebody else?
You know, by the time Brady got to the Super Bowl, I would have to say the majority of Patriots fans were rooting for Brady. I mean, because if you were rooting against him, you were rooting against the 20 years, the way he conducted himself and all that he did here. So, you know, they weren't playing the Patriots. You know, that would be a whole different thing. That happens next year if everything goes normal. They're scheduled to come to Foxborough. Hopefully there'll be fans in that. That'll be one of the toughest tickets ever. But I think people were rooting for Brady. I really do.
What are they rooting for to happen at quarterback for their team for next year?
Well, I can tell you what they don't want is Cam Newton back, but there are a lot of signs pointing to – well, first of all, the Patriots haven't said a word about anything. They're just not. They're being very mum. Sorry, I'm getting my oil changed. So I'm multitasking here, Soren. I was just driving around listening to the radio. Cam Newton was on a podcast with Brandon Marshall, and he's saying all the right things. He won't take any shots to Patriots, and they were leading him down that you didn't have any weapons, you didn't have the time, he wouldn't go there. So, you know, the thing with Cam Newton is, A, he just didn't play well. Everything else, he was a joy to deal with. He was mature. He was a surprise to a lot of us with, how he conducted himself. But, I think they're going to draft a quarterback, Nolan Belichick. It won't be with the 15th pick unless he really likes Mac Jones or one of these other guys. I wouldn't be shocked by anything, but I would be surprised if they trade up to try and get Zach Wilson or Justin Fields or whoever it is. But knowing Belichick, I mean, what fans want is Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, if that's even a possibility. And even back from that, they want Jimmy Garoppolo back. They just think Garoppolo would work in this system. But who are the Niners getting at quarterback if they're getting rid of Jimmy Garoppolo? That's the big question, right?
Yeah. So first of all, on Cam Newton, you said he was saying all the right things and the podcast that you were listening to with him. He didn't necessarily hit any home run, though, did he, with the kid that was heckling him? What's your reaction to that video that's out there today?
You broke up at the end there. Just say that once again, sir. I'm sorry.
What was your reaction to the video that's out there with him going back and forth with the kid that's heckling him and his ultimate, what he thinks is his drop the mic line of "I'm rich"?
I didn't see that. When did that come out?
I don't know. I'd probably say sometime this morning, or maybe it was even last night. I can't remember. But he basically went back and forth with a kid. It looked like maybe he was on the sidelines at a camp or something, and the kid's like, "You're a free agent. Like, who do you think you are?" And he went back at him and said, I'm rich," was ultimately his line. It was just this little exchange with what appeared to be a teenage kid. And go ahead.
Yeah, we've seen athletes do that, and I can't defend that. I'll have to see it. But I can just tell you what he did this year is he said all the right things. He conducted himself well. By all accounts, he was the first one there every day and the last one to leave, which makes it even more frustrating the way he played. Like, if he put that much time in. The argument for Cam Newton, and you don't get a lot of Patriots fans arguing it, is that, well, look what he had around him, you know? I mean, he had to replace Tom Brady, which was a yeoman's effort anyway, and they really didn't give him anything around him. So I just wouldn't be shocked if Bill Belichick brings him back. I can tell you wholeheartedly, there aren't many Patriots fans, if any at all, that want that to happen.
He had a lot less. I mean, he had about the same thing as Tom Brady did, with a lot less success. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where they do go at quarterback, what he does do. Tell me, what are the Royals getting Andrew Benintendi?
Well, they're getting a 26-year-old kid who was the seventh pick in the draft. As we all know, the Golden Spikes Award winner, the kid who can hit a baseball. But they got him at a great price, in my opinion. Who knows what Franchi Cordero is going to turn out to be, and whatever the players are going to be named later. But his stock was low. It couldn't have been lower. People are still scratching their heads, feel like the Red Sox just gave up on him. He's a good player. He's never really reached his full potential his first two seasons. He had 36 home runs. He threatened to hit 300 or more. He ran the bases well. He was a good defender. I'm still scratching my head about that one, because they had to get under the luxury tax. Jackie Bradley they still haven't signed, which has put them over. So maybe that was the reason, but it was not a popular move with Red Sox fans. I mean, I think the Royals got a very good baseball player who may get a fire lit under his butt, and a new environment might work for him.
So what are the expectations for the Red Sox this year?
Well, I just did a little one-on-one with Alex Cora the other day, and he loves the fact that, you know, he's back and he's saying all the right things and admitting that he screwed up. He said, "I made a mistake. I'm not a bad person," about the year he was off and everything. He loves the fact that for the first time in his Red Sox career, whether as a player or a manager, that there's no expectation that, you know, we'll see, count this team out. There's just too many things that would have to go right for the Red Sox to contend. And when you look at what the Blue Jays did and the Yankees there and the Rays won the division, they're the fourth best team in the division at best, if they're better than Baltimore. What they have going for them is Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers, and building around that. J.D. Martinez is still here. Alex Verdugo looks like, you know, that they got for Mookie Betts, might be a good player. They have a ton of prospects. They have a kid in the minors named Jaron Duran that everybody's really high on. But, I mean, their starting staff, with Chris Sale not back till at least after the All-Star break with Tommy John surgery, is Eddie Rodriguez, Nathan Eovaldi, Garrett Richards, I mean, you know, Nick Pivetta, and who am I forgetting for the fifth one? It's forgettable. But, you know, it's like, in my experience, in my lifetime, when you start asking questions about a team and what coming into a season, well, this has to happen, if that, you get to the third if, well, you get to about six ifs with the Red Sox very quickly. So, I mean, they'd have to
too
really
many ifs.
Try.
Yeah. Too many ifs don't equal success. You're right, no doubt about it. Butch Stearns in Boston, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Get back to that oil change. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, sir, man. Good talking with you.
I'm a Detroit player.
Jim Costa, 97, won the ticket in Detroit, Michigan. Jim, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing very good. Michigan, do they have a claim to being the best team in college basketball after that big win against Ohio State?
I feel like, what was it, we talked a week ago and I told you yes, and then they go out and beat Ohio State. I feel like there's more of an argument now. I don't think they'll get the number one overall seed, just because if you go undefeated in college basketball, if you're Gonzaga or Baylor, they're not going to take it away from them. But the wins that Michigan's stacking in the toughest conference in college basketball, and the way they're doing it, that game against Ohio State, it's really impressive stuff for Juwan Howard in just his second season.
How surprised are you that the X's and O's are as good as they are? Everyone expected him to recruit, but he can flat out X and O it as well. He's clearly built a team that, you know, this isn't like just collect a bunch of talent and roll the ball out there and get out of the way. How impressive has that been?
Well, especially because he replaced a man with 40 years head coaching experience in John Beilein, who was a tactician, right? And the criticism of Juwan at the time he was hired, I was one of those guys leveling it, so I'll give it to you, was, yeah, what was he, a third or fourth assistant in Miami? Does he have an out-of-bounds play? Even at his introductory press conference, he couldn't give specifics as the schematics or style. And it was like, okay, he's emotional. He loves Michigan. That will clearly resonate with the team. But can he actually coach? And the answer has been a resounding yes. When you look at the way they played Ohio State, that's a team that likes to get up and down and shoot. And Michigan was playing great defense, but the shots were falling anyway. So what do? You don't sulk. You don't put your head down. You continue to battle. You continue to close out. And you know what? You're going to have to beat them at their game on the road against the top five team, and they pulled it out. And I thought they went haymaker for haymaker with Ohio State. And I think it spoke to the style that Juwan has brought in, but also the culture that he's created.
By the way, you mentioned inbounds play. Does he have one? And if so, can you give it to me? Because I could use one for next weekend.
Well, I'll tell you this. A lot of the talk here has been Michigan doesn't have a go-to player, and that's normally a knock on a team. But because they have so many options offensively, they don't need one guy. Dickinson had the 22 points, and you can always dump it down to the big guy. But they're getting scoring. They've got a couple of transfers, Sean D. Brown and Mike Smith, that are both shooting well and battling. Isaiah Livers, though, is probably the closest thing they have to a go-to guy. He can score at all three levels. It's nice to have options for Juwan Howard.
Sure. Athletic director Ward Manuel gets a contract extension, certainly partially, I'm sure, because he identified, and not that nobody knew who Juwan Howard was, but he put his name behind the fact that this guy will have success. He also engineered a contract extension for Jim Harbaugh that gives him, as you pointed out, what, about a 50% pay cut. Clearly the university's happy with where things are going with him, or is this, does football need to get turned in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're an athletic director. You're judged on all of your programs, but football is the one that drives the bus, brings in the most revenue, creates the biggest buzz for your university, especially in a place like Michigan. And, I could break down the hockey team's success, but you'd hang up on me. I could tell you about baseball and softball, and they're great. It comes down to what happens on the football field. For as great as Juwan Howard's been, Ward Manuel's biggest blemish has been the fact that he kept Jim Harbaugh, a coach through six seasons, hasn't developed a quarterback, hasn't won a Big Ten title, hasn't beat Ohio State, and doesn't have a winning record against scuffling Michigan State in his own backyard. Cutting his salary in half and keeping him was kind of an admission that he hasn't gotten the job done, but that they're still happy to have him next fall. That thing is still a mess over there.
Tell me, you mentioned the quarterback position. Joe Milton transferring out. I believe this is the sixth quarterback to transfer out from Michigan. Does Jim Harbaugh recognize that that's not a good thing?
It's a good question, right? So I did the math, and you really got to start counting. This fall will be his seventh season, and he will have his eighth quarterback. So that's not good. And there was this talk that Jim Harbaugh is a quarterback whisperer, right? I guess he's whispering leaves because there really hasn't been much continuity there. These quarterbacks, they've come in, they were highly touted, either it's an issue with scouting or an issue with developing, but they get there, they spend a year or two, and then when they don't win the starting job or they get replaced as the starter, they move on. And Jim Harbaugh not having consistent play at the quarterback position is one of the biggest issues with the program.
How are the Pistons, and I know they're not the only one because former Piston Andre Drummond is just sitting and watching in Cleveland as well. How is this working that you've got a guy who's under contract and you're paying him not to play? I mean, I know they want to trade him, but so get on with it. I mean, is this really the new way of doing business in the NBA?
Well, yeah. I mean, the news came down for both of them on the same day that, former Piston Drummond's not going to play and Blake Griffin's not going to play either. And it's actually not being met with much vitriol from the fans. I think they want to see some of the younger Pistons play. I think they realize that, Blake Griffin at this point isn't what he was with Los Angeles or even when he first arrived in Detroit. And we could talk about trades if you want, but I think what's the reality is he's going to get bought out. I mean, I think they're waiting for someone to take $38 million for this year and next year's player option. And they're going to be waiting for a very long time. I think the obvious solution here is you work out a deal with Blake where you cut him a big check where he still gets most of that money, but it allows the Pistons to move on and play some of the younger players and secure potentially that number one overall pick in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, that's where it's headed, no doubt. Jim Costa in Detroit. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
Appreciate you guys.
Nice. Matthew Caller, Purple Insider in Minneapolis, Minnesota is next. Matthew, how are you, my friend?
Oh, it's up over 30 degrees here, so I'm outside in my shorts, no shirt on, got some sunglasses. It's a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. We're into the 50s today, going to get into the high 60s tomorrow, so we're rejoicing as well. It's all relative there, no doubt. Tell me. Timberwolves fire their coach. Of course, he had the worst record over the last 2 years, last year and this year combined. You can understand it. But and I have no problem with him going in another direction, but that's clearly not the problem, right? The problem is the players. Like, does anybody point out that Karl-Anthony Towns hasn't really peed a drop other than to put up some stats? that they have a roster that has 2-1-1s and a 1-2 on it, and they're still the worst team in basketball?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Not only is it hard to point a finger at Ryan Saunders for the reason they are where they are, there's some bad luck, there's some bad decision-making, but it also, the way it went down was very bizarre. Like, the team tweets out, "Thank you, Ryan," and you know, the national reporters are reporting that they've already got another coach in place. It's like, whoa, okay. I guess you guys have been plotting this for a while, but it really feels like their president of basketball operations, Gerson Rosas, is trying to sort of pass the buck here to somebody else, when really the mirror is where he should be looking. Because as you mentioned, I mean, they have not drafted well with some of these high picks to put around Karl Anthony Towns. They've made moves that they always tell you are the next answer. Oh, well, D'Angelo Russell, he's the answer. I don't know if, I mean, Gerson Rosas Googled D'Angelo Russell before he traded for him, but he's not very good. I mean, he's okay as maybe like a fourth or fifth best player on a roster, but there's a reason why Golden State was okay moving away from him. And, you know, it's like they've sort of chased their tail with all these moves, and yet the result is they don't have a ton of talent on the roster and are really hoping that Anthony Edwards is the one to bail them out. So, I mean, I think it is about as bad of a look as you could possibly have for an organization that has no other type of look. So, yeah, I mean, yes, it's it wasn't the greatest coaching job I've ever seen. Certainly there were times I questioned it, but I also think the roster around Karl Anthony Towns has just been mostly abysmal since Gerson Rosas got here.
I mean, I don't know. Do they just not know what a winner is? Right? Like, is there, do they miss the character and integrity part of it? Like it, does Karl Anthony Towns have that? I mean, you know, he wanted his buddy D'Angelo Russell. They gave him to him. That each of them have been hurt for their share of this year, or out for this year. You know, I mean, like, don't, I hate to say it, but you don't want to give up like a franchise center. But, you know, I mean, like, I kind of think you're at a point where he needs a new place and you need a new guy, aren't you?
Yeah, no, and that's definitely something that, you know, has come up a lot, and I tend to subscribe to Karl Anthony Towns not being a good enough all-around player to single-handedly drive you to success with a bunch of other decent guys around him. I think that he's maybe the number two or number three best player on a team that's going to win a championship. Maybe he's like your Chris Bosh or something on a championship type of team, because he isn't that Anthony Davis all-around dominant player. And he's really become more of a perimeter player than he is under the basket, which, you know, I know is the modern way, but also relying on a big man to hit threes all the time is pretty tough. I definitely think that, like, the player that they've made their centerpiece is not good enough to win you a championship, but the reason they're not even remotely good is all the other things. It's been, you know, they drafted a player, 6th overall, in Jarrett Culver, who can't shoot. It's like, wait, you guys wanted to go to be a smaller team, an undersized team, to shoot a bunch of three-pointers, and then you draft a guy with a 6th overall pick who can't shoot. It's like, I'm missing something here. So, I think it's been a lot of just sort of chasing their tail and, you know, kind of saying the next thing will be the thing that we finally get it right, and I'm not sure there should be any trust in the people, you know, pushing the buttons at this point.
Okay. All right, tell me, what's the Vikings' offseason plan, draft and free agency?
Well, they're trading for Deshaun Watson, like all other 29 teams or whatever, right? It was great for content to see, Peter King include the Vikings in a Deshaun Watson trade. But I think if we're talking about a realistic plan for the Vikings this offseason, it's probably much more of stay the course and to fill in the pieces around Kirk Cousins and just kind of see if they can bounce back from last year. I don't know if there's a lot of confidence that even like signing a defensive lineman, drafting an offensive lineman, things like that, I don't know if there's a lot of confidence that that's going to take them any farther than they've already been with Kirk Cousins. It feels very much like the poor man's version of what you had there with Alex Smith, because I don't think Kirk Cousins is as good as Alex Smith was. It kind of feels like they're stuck. And that's where I think a lot of us, including me, wonder at some point, do you do the big giant thing that, you know, your fans want? Because just repeating the same thing year after year has kind of got the fan base pretty restless, I think.
Is there any decreased expectation for the Twins after what they've done the last couple of years?
No, I think that they've set their standard pretty high here to the point where when they're getting eliminated from the playoffs in the first round, it's disappointing instead of like, hey, we had a decent year. I think that there were a lot of people that wanted more from this offseason, but they've built a really good foundation. It's just, can you find a way to get past that first round? I mean, I don't think anyone expects them to necessarily be a World Series winning team, but it almost feels like, you know, that they allowed, by losing in the first round the last couple of years, they allowed the other teams to catch up, and especially the Chicago White Sox. And I saw some projections have the White Sox and Twins to be pretty even. And I think that's where the regret might be, that you know, they had this chance where everyone else was just awful in the division, and now that might not be the case. It doesn't change the expectation, but it might change how difficult it is to be one of the best teams in the AL.
Matthew Caller in Minneapolis. Great stuff, my friend. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Africa to
New York. Alex Schiffer from The Athletic in Brooklyn, New York. Schiffman, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you? Good to hear from
you. Doing very well. Tell me, how comfortable are the Nets getting, or can they even get comfortable when they can't get all three of the big three out on the court?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, this season reminds me of the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire. Every week they have something else happen to them. You know, as good as they've looked with this recent win streak, I mean, I feel like you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt just because it hasn't been with Kevin Durant. You know, they've had James Harden a month, but they've only had James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving on the court together for seven games. So it's, you know, they're still far from a finished product for sure.
Are they better with just two of them on the floor? Any two of them on the floor?
No. Defensively, maybe on a given night, but offensively, they're next to. They are unguardable when they have all three of them out there.
All right, because I mean they look pretty good against the Clippers last night. That was the Sunday night game on ESPN. Nobody's irritated with how much the ball is in the hand with Harden. We haven't heard any feedback on that yet.
You know, it's been interesting the way that's all gone down. I mean, Kyrie Irving said recently he told James Harden that Harden's the point guard and he'll play shooting guard. And I thought that was a big moment. I mean, Irving's obviously, it's been interesting with his career as to how, you know, he's been treated at different stops. He wanted out of Cleveland because he didn't want to be second fiddle to LeBron. You know, it didn't really work in Boston with him as the main guy. And I thought that was his own way of kind of an admission that Harden's better off running the team and he's better off being the offensive firepower as a complement to Harden's playmaking from that perspective. So, you know, all three guys have sacrificed and done what's needed so far. But, I mean, defensively, they're still a work in progress. They're 25th in the NBA right now. I mean, only three teams have won a title without a top 10 defense. And they need to just get the confidence, let alone, you know, out of the cellar with that. So, right now, they're saying and doing all the right things. But can they make it work in crunch time? And can they get the defense to a respectable level? I mean, those to me are going to be the things that can define them. And health as well, obviously.
Is there any chance that the Jets will stay at number two and do anything but take a quarterback, or do anything but stay at two and take a quarterback? Would they trade? Is there still hope of Deshaun Watson? What's the plan as far as who's under center?
I haven't really been on the how do I put it? I have a hard time seeing them go for Watson just because his contract would really limit their ability to build a good roster around him. You know, I've long said that I think what happens to Sam Darnold should be the call of Robert Saleh and the new OC, the other LaFleur. If they think they can fix him, then do what you want with that number two pick. Some people talk about the guy from Oregon, the offensive lineman, being a good pick there. You know, other people have talked about Devontae Smith as a weapon for him. If they think he should be traded, then deal him. If they want to take a quarterback, whether it be Justin Fields or someone else, I think it should be their call. So I'm really curious to see what they do. I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back maybe, but I think there's a lot on the table for them as to where they go with that.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of options, but they better get it right. You know, that's
yeah,
one of the things.
I lived through the Vernon Golston pick, sir, and that aged me, and we hadn't even met then.
yes, it did. All right, finally, baseball. You know, the Yankees, they've been a team that everyone thinks can win the championship. They haven't really. They've gotten to the postseason but haven't come close. How much pressure is on them to push all the way through to the World Series this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the expectation. And they, you know, Aaron Boone, I think, has done a pretty good job as manager coming in for Joe Girardi. But, you know, they always have the roster. It's always been about getting there. And, you know, it's crazy. They've been out of the World Series now for over 10 years. And, you know, I mean, I think on paper they have about as good of a team as ever. And you look at the Rays in the division, you know, they're obviously a big threat. The Red Sox are rebuilding. The Blue Jays are kind of one of those weird teams of, you know, how do you gauge them with, they look like they're ready to make a leap, but do they? I think that the expectations there and that they can definitely get to the CS, they just haven't done it lately, so I don't have the faith for them to get through. But I mean, it's on. The pressure's certainly on, especially after that Gerrit Cole contract and LeMahieu contract.
And finally, and most importantly, what'd you have for lunch today?
So I got cold cuts. I made myself a turkey sandwich.
Nice.
I know I've
nice.
Had way better answers. I know I've had way better answers. But, again, we're getting hit with snow here right now. So limited, just like the Nets have limited abilities to upgrade the roster with three max contracts, I have limited abilities to upgrade my menu given the weather conditions.
We can handle the truth, Schiffer. We can handle the truth. It's all right. Alex Schiffer in Brooklyn. Great stuff as always, buddy. We encourage everybody to check him out. Another reason, great reason to get a subscription to The Athletic. Alex, we appreciate it, buddy. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks for having me, man. Always love talking to you guys.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Giannis Antetokounmpo shot 24 free throws Sunday, the most by a Bucks player since who or whom?
He had how many?
24. He shot 24 free throws.
Russell Westbrook used to just live going to the rim. He shot a bunch. I'll try Russell Westbrook.
No, most by a Bucks player since.
Oh,
since
by
who?
A Buck. Well, yeah. Kareem then.
Yeah. In fact, he was still going by Lou Alcindor when he shot 25.
Well, I know that.
I mean, he changed while he was with the Bucks, but it was his first year. He changed in 71 going into his second season with the Bucks, and he changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but he was still going by Lou Alcindor when he did it on March 8, 1970. Just 51 years since anyone had done it.
Yeah, well, that's a lot, especially when everybody's drifting out, you know, to the perimeter these days. Nobody wants to take it inside of the paint, so it's tough to get, you know, you're not going to live at the line. You know, chucking from downtown, so it's a different game. But he's one of the few that still does, you know, go to the rim with some abandon when he heads in there. That's not too. It's not actually that shocking that it would be, you know, that long. Because that is a lot, man. That's a lot of free throws.
Yeah.
Good Sense has you covered. GoodSenseSubs.com, the app, even easier, quickest way. Couple of touches on the touch screen. Every option's right there, all intuitive, easy to use. And, of course, you can get your rewards as well. Their loyalty program, by far the best, 10% back. They slice the meats and cheeses fresh every day, bake the bread fresh twice each day. You'll smell it the moment you walk in the door, whether you're dining in, carrying out, curbside, or delivery. Good Sense has you covered. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com. Right now, and get your sub for tonight. I want to go back to something we talked about there in the drill. The Timberwolves firing their coach. Like, I know for like if you're a fan and Matthew Coller's local, like you have, you know, he's invested in it. You're like, well, we have this great center. He does everything. He can shoot threes. He can block shots, points, rebounds. He's a 2010 guy. You know, we can't let go of this guy. But is that like not the greatest example of, you know, talent plus talent plus talent equals nothing? Like, they have 1-1, 1-1, and 1-2 on their roster.
And have the 26th best win percentage in that time from when they drafted Karl-Anthony Towns. It's just, there is something to not just chemistry, but strategy. You can't just put these three great players here. And
wait, but aren't they 27th? Didn't you say they had the fourth worst?
I only see 30. Is there?
Yeah, so if they're your fourth worst, you're actually 27th. Because last is 30th.
No, there are four worse than them. Bulls, okay. Nets, okay, Knicks, and Suns. So they're.
So you get a 1-1, mm-hmm. who, by the way, statistically, this is not Michael Olowokandi.
Right, he's not a bust.
Right, who just ended up being nothing as number one. It's not Andrew Bargnani, who went to the Raptors with the number one overall pick. The guy's putting up numbers. It's either the most inept organization ever because they literally have no idea what to put around him, or the guy's a loser.
Yep.
And at some point, if you're Minnesota, you got to be like, this. No combination that they put around him. You know, they went to the playoffs and lost in what, 18?
17. 17 or 18. I think it was, let's see.
Jimmy Butler was their go-to guy, and the first thing they did after going to the playoffs for the first time with this group and having Jimmy Butler was, we got to get rid of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns, correct my memory here, he did not play in the playoffs last year, correct?
I think that's correct.
That's a hard no. That's an easy one. That's just for a fact.
That's good to tell if you're
Jimmy
doing
Butler played in the NBA Finals in his first year with the Miami Heat, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeppers.
I mean, you talk about an organization that doesn't get it. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves.
And they have not won you mentioned them. They went to the postseason once and then lost in the first round. I mean, they have not won a postseason series and only played in one since he was drafted.
I don't think they've won a series. They haven't won many series, period, have they?
Not since, well, the last time they won a series.
Period.
Yeah. That series in 2018 was the only postseason series the Timberwolves have been in since 2004 when Kevin Garnett was still there.
Yeah, but even when he was there, it wasn't like they were banging on the door of the NBA
Finals.
This
is what's amazing. They lost in the first round every year except for 2004, they lost in the conference finals. But every other year, first round loss. In 2004, they got to the conference finals. And they lost to, that would have been Detroit. But every other year. That's the only year in which they've won a postseason series in their history, which, by the way, this is their 32nd year in existence.
They have, and I'm looking up that year. I just want to make sure. Here it is, schedule and results.
So that's Western Finals. They would have lost to the Lakers, I guess. I forgot they're in the West.
They lost in six. So they won in five over the Denver Nuggets that year. They won in seven over the Kings, which I think back then, would that have had Chris Webber?
I think they were. Let me pull them up. I think they still were. Yeah, Mike Bibby.
Stoyo. Yeah. Kings. And then they lost in six to the Lakers.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are the only two playoff series that franchise has ever won.
That's stunning. That's like almost Detroit Lions levels of crap.
Yeah. I mean, it is. They haven't won a playoff series since 2004. They've only won two in their entire history, which began in the 89-90 season. They did, during the Kevin Garnett years, go to eight straight playoffs. And in 2004, they got to the conference finals. And then they would not go again until 18, which they would lose in the first round.
That's going
to
be some
kind of
record.
Tom Thibodeau was their coach. So what did they got to the playoffs, and they got rid of the guy who led them in scoring and the coach. It's worked out beautifully.
Yes. That's going to be some kind of record, though. Seven consecutive first-round losses.
And I'll guarantee you that, like, Jimmy Butler and Tom Thibodeau were probably like, listen, Wiggins is a dog. Towns is a dog. You got to get rid of those guys. And they're like, oh, well, clearly you guys don't get it. You're out. So Thibodeau's got a Knicks team with a bunch of, like, cast-off and you know, late first-round pick type guys that have a winning record and have a playoff spot right now if the playoffs were today. Well, at least they did last weekend or last Friday when I looked. I'll have to look at the NBA standings right now. But you know, that's what Thibodeau's doing, and Jimmy Butler was in the NBA Finals with the Heat last year.
Yeah, and some people will say, you know, Thibodeau, well, he's a guy who can kind of get you close, but not over, you know, not all the way. But as opposed to who?
Right?
As opposed to the guys who don't even get there?
Yeah, to be clear, the Knicks are the 7 seed right now. So they're actually, Thibodeau's got them in the playoffs. The Heat are the 10 seed, but have had a number of injuries along the way. So we'll see if they're able to get up and running. But I like, if you want to know about chemistry, it's not just pure talent or chemistry and, like, winning. It's not just pure talent. Like, there are losers out there that are talented guys, and you have to avoid those people.
Yeah.
You know, like, Tyreek Hill is fast, but he also is tough and will go and go and go and go. Patrick Mahomes athletically isn't the best. The arm talent's phenomenal. Athletically, he's pretty damn good, but he will compete and compete and compete and compete. And that's what makes him great. Like, for, no matter what the sport is, the guys that will go and go and go and go are worth more. And that's what you hope you've gotten, like, in an Andrew Benintendi, who's talented. He's talented as far as batting eye and bat on ball. Not super talented as far as power, because what did he say in his introductory Zoom? He's 5'9", 170 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to blast the ball over the wall, but hopefully when healthy, he's going to grind out at bat after at bat after at bat after at bat and wear down pitchers and make this whole lineup better. Like, you have to find those kind of guys. I'm not saying he's definitely that guy. I think he's that guy. I think that's what he did in Boston. I'm optimistic he's that guy. I definitely think that's the guy the Royals think they're getting. And I'm optimistic, but there's so much more than talent, because the Timberwolves have raw talent, and they suck. I think it's such an important lesson to understand, you know, if you're an organization. And to understand when you got a guy that gets basketball in Tom Thibodeau, and maybe he's a guy that can get you close and can't win it all. Or maybe he's a guy that I think is a lot like Cotton Fitzsimmons was when he coached the Kings, that he's a really good basketball coach that gets the most out of his players. And what he needs is to be partnered up with a really brilliant general manager, because he's always going to play better than the talent he's got, and which is going to tease you, and you're going to think, well, we're pretty close. No, really, he's just doing a phenomenal job. And sometimes winning, you know, games that keep you from getting that high pick. So you need a general manager that can engineer the high draft pick or engineer the deal to go get that difference-making player. Jimmy Butler was one of those players. They had him for like 5 minutes, and then they ran him out of town.
Yeah, who's another coach that could get you close but not quite? Andy Reid. I mean, yeah. Reid had a little bit better track record maybe than Thibodeau, but mm-hmm. that's one of those things, you know. If you just assume that, well, once we get to where we're ready to win, we got to find somebody else. Maybe not. Maybe you just need to give that guy
Would you be fine if the Timberwolves actually had gotten close?
Right, but they didn't.
But they hadn't even gotten close.
No.
They're like, all right, we're going a new direction. Like, we got to the playoffs. You clearly can't get us that next step.
Yeah.
Well, getting to the playoffs is not one step from a championship.
No.
I mean, getting to the playoffs as the 8th seed is filling the commercial inventory. Like, yeah. It's not hockey. 8 seeds don't make a run and win championships. Although the Heat did go as, what, a 6 or 7 last year?
I mean, that
to the finals. It was in a bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an odd year. But, I mean, I think it spoke to Jimmy Butler at heart. Under massive duress, he picked that team up and dragged them.
Yeah.
Won a game even without Goran Dragic, and did was it without Bam Adebayo too? Won a game in the finals. I know he won at least one or two without
Dragic,
because Dragic was pretty much done, and when he was out there, he was a detriment. So, you know, I'm impressed. Yeah, I'm impressed. I like what the guy does. I mean, I think he brings a lot to the table. I don't understand. You know, a lot of teams just don't seem to get it. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit about the Cam Newton video that's out there where he ends up trash talking with a kid. We'll do that next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I'm a fat ass with a microphone.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, I mentioned this to Butch Stearns, and I can't believe he hadn't heard this, but I mean, maybe we caught Butch on a day off. He was clearly running around getting things done as he was getting his oil changed, he said. Here's part of an exchange between Cam Newton and Jacinth Owens, a high school player that was taking part in a 7-on-7 tournament in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
You ass. You're a free agent. You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
All right, a couple things there. I don't know where this came from, like where it got started. Like, I would not, you know, what did Cam Newton say, hey, sit down, or you got to do this better, and the kid got upset and started firing at him, or was Cam Newton just walking along? Like, what precipitated this?
Yeah, I have not seen anything on
that. I haven't seen it either. Yeah, and I can't say that I've dug super deep about, like, what preceded everything. You know, but I don't think the kid, unless Cam Newton said something to set him off, I don't think that's like if you're at a camp and you go taunt a guy, right?
Right.
It seemed like and if you're Cam Newton, there's no, like, you got to just turn around and walk away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, telling the kid you're rich, that's not getting it done.
No. What best case scenario, you beat a high school kid in an argument? I mean, that's the best case scenario, which isn't very good.
Right? And the, like, where's your pops? Like, that, I mean, I get it. You know, I'm tired of talking to this kid. Get him out of here. Where's his dad? Tell him to come get him. I mean, I think he's with it. Who did anybody win in that exchange?
No. Nope.
I mean, I guarantee you there's a lot of people that love the kid. There's an apology from the kid.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you'd love him for it, but other than it shows he's fearless.
Yeah, the kid said, deepest apologies to Cam Newton, my entire organization, and my coaches for my actions at the 7-on-7 tournament this past weekend. I did not intend for it to get as far as it did. First, I'd like to start off by saying my parents never taught me to disrespect people. As a football player, I let my competitive side get the best of me, and it was a huge miscommunication. It was in the midst of the moment, and I realize now that a lot of you took it as disrespect. I never meant to humiliate and let anyone down. You definitely meant to humiliate the man. You kept calling him a free agent.
I am
very appreciative for 7-on-7 to even allow me to be part of the community and allowing me to be part of the team I'm currently on. I realize this can dictate my future as a young man, having very big dreams and goals, but I will not allow this to stop me from getting where I need to be. So, again, I apologize. You know, it's just a bad situation, but it's just yet another reminder that there's always a camera around.
Yes.
There's always a camera around. Just assume, you know, there's a rule in radio that if you're around a microphone, assume it's on. Because it might be, you never know, that somebody left the microphone on. Like, there was like one of the D2 football games this weekend, ref didn't know his mic was on, band stops playing at halftime, and he's like, get this blankety blank blank thing off, and it goes over the whole stadium loudspeaker, right? If you're around a mic, you have to, not that I always do it, I've been fortunate, good people like Jed usually getting the button off, but like that, we're getting to a point in society where you have to assume you're on camera now, because you frankly you probably are with all the cameras that are around streets and businesses and everything like that,
especially if you're Cam
like
Newton.
So yeah, just assume that you're on camera. Nobody got hurt. That's a good thing, but hopefully some lessons were learned.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, two players in NBA history have had one number retired by one franchise and a different number retired by a different franchise. Name either one. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.